live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. You can go to Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And you can connect with me all those different places. And for our flagship station in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I know I'm going to get some flack for some people in Pittsburgh, especially Panther fans. But I'm telling you right now, I remember 1980. I remember how an awesome football player he was. He is a member of the Pennsylvania State Sports Hall of Fame. He's a national champion from 1986. I want to welcome the program NFL star, 1986 national champion from Penn State, Blair Thomas. Blair, how are you?
Neil, how you doing? Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm excited to talk with you. And I can't say if I always cheered for you because, again, I bleed blue and gold. And we've had a lot of different Pitt guys on the show. But we've also had Penn State. So I definitely have a different thing. But, I mean, it's amazing to listen to see your background, your unbelievable career, and to look back at the days of Penn State. They must have been very memorable, weren't they?
Yes, I mean, anytime you go back, well, let me just back up for a second, because any college player that have played at any major college should have enjoyed his experience in college, because everybody know college is the best time of your life. But to be a part of a national championship team, to play with some guys who sacrifice so much and guys who decide to come back for their fifth year to try to go for a national championship after we lost to Oklahoma my freshman year, just to be under that guidance of quality players was just an outstanding experience for me. And I loved that experience, that college experience.
I'm sure, definitely, and a lot of times that's what drives you in so many ways are the memories of playing at somewhere like Penn State, playing in front of 100,000 people, and truly being a big fish in a small pond, meaning Penn State and the campus and just the winning, and to bring home a national championship to Penn State, where, you know, Penn State doesn't have that many national championships, but so tons of people remember 1986 for sure.
Well, yes, because that's a signature year that everybody can go back to when we were on top of everything. And with the stuff that happened recently, you kind of forget about the legacy and history of Penn State. But I'm one of the players that's out here making sure everybody understands that history is written the correct way. And to be a part of that national championship was just a great run for us. We had some outstanding players, and I think Coach Franklin is doing a great job recruiting to get Penn State back into the elite, or I should say the top 10, programs in college football.
Absolutely. He is unbelievable energy, amazing guy for sure. And I can't believe Pitt let him go. You know, they had him right in the doorstep at times and they didn't even look at him. That's too bad. But let's go. Did you always want to be a football player, Blair, growing up?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did from a very young age. I like to call it like it is, to be honest with you. Growing up, I wasn't a great student until I found out in order to go to the NFL, you had to go to college first. So through that process, got me to focus more on the academic side of things. And I was able to get into Penn State and then work on staying there in order to do well, academically.
So at that time, so that you always wanted to be in, then you got the opportunity to go to Penn State. Growing up, was that one of the colleges you wanted to play at?
Yes, it was definitely one of my plans is to play in the NFL. And I like to tell young kids now when I go around to different football camps around the country, I like to tell kids that, they can accomplish anything they want to if they put their mind to it and focus on it and work towards it every day. A lot of people think, things happen overnight, but it's a process in which you got to work on it day in and day out, year round.
So your freshman year, Blair, was what year was your freshman year at Penn State?
85 was my freshman year. I got a chance to play as a true freshman and kick off returns. I got some carries out of the backfield, but it wasn't until the year that we won the national championship that I got a chance to get more carries out of the backfield. And, you know, DJ Dozier was there as well, so he was a great mentor for me and, you know, helped me understand what it takes to play at the collegiate level. And as guys grow up and they, you know, go through the different high school, college, and then to the NFL, it's always great to have a good mentor to kind of, you know, bridge that gap of between your thought process of playing at that level and what it really takes to play at that level.
We're talking to Blair Thomas, former Penn State and NFL star, and talking about, again, that time. So you were kind of trading, you again were being mentored by DJ Dozier at that year in 1986. So when do you think was your best breakout year? Was it your senior year, the year that just really had your best football at Penn State?
Well, my last 2 years, my junior year and my senior year was kind of almost identical years, rushed for over 1,500 yards, you know, in consecutive years. But I had a knee injury after my junior year, and I had to sit out what would have been my senior year. I sat out and then came back for the fall of my fifth year. So those were the two breakout years because they were kind of the same. But at that point, DJ had passed the baton, and I accepted that challenge to go out there and make sure that, you know, I continue to understand that I'm not just playing for myself or just, you know, our team, but there's a lot of fans out there that support Penn State for a ton of years, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I didn't let them down.
So did you, a lot of hard work, right, Blair, especially after the injury. You had a great year, and then you get injured, and you say, oh, how am I going to come back? And then luckily you had that fifth year.
Well, yes, luckily I had the fifth year, but things happened for a reason. And, I told my mom that I was going to graduate, so I made that a point of emphasis, which everybody knows Joe Paterno always focused in on making sure that, you know, we went to class and that, you know, that we was, you know, trickling towards graduation. Because the one thing that, you know, Joe understood is that every guy doesn't make it to the NFL, and you're going to have something to fall back on. And I am truly, you know, glad that I made that decision to go to Penn State and play under a coach that had that focus.
Definitely. And so kind of before we go into the NFL and then life after football, Blair, would you say now, especially with what came out with the scandal and Paterno and things like that, you have the utmost respect for Joe Paterno, and he was probably, as you talked about off air with me, somebody that you truly consider one of your greatest mentors for sure, and friends, right? And Coach Paterno.
Yes, without a doubt. My father passed away my junior year up at Penn State, and if I had any issues or problems or something that I needed to talk to someone with, then Joe was my guy. So I know Joe make sure that, you know, he put, you know, a kid's well-being before anything else. And, you know, he's a true mentor to me. And, you know, and some of the things I do when coaching, I still use some of his, you know, his language and terminology when I'm, you know, teaching kids.
Absolutely. And he really made the emphasis of being great, not just on the field, but in the classroom as well. Right, Blair?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He made sure that, I mean, you know, he had to make sure coaches was at breakfast check to make sure we was up out of bed, getting our day started with a nice meal. And then, yeah, people going around checking classes. And, you know, it wasn't uncharacteristic to see him walking through campus.
And walking through campus and showing that importance and showing how important his players were to him. And that's the thing that people forget, is that he truly wanted not just you to become a great football player, but a great human being. And Anthony Adams talked about that. And Lou Prado, who came on a lot, that's involved with Penn State football, covering it and stuff, has mentioned the same thing about Joe Paterno and how much he cares for his players, for sure. And in that process of going from college to the pros, did Joe Paterno help you in that transition to get you ready, thought process, understanding of now life after college and going on to the pros?
Yes, well, what he did was he would bring in a life coach, to let people understand that there's more to life than just football. And a lot of young kids, you know, they think football is it. That's going to be their ticket, and nothing's going to stop them from achieving their goal. But at the same time, we know, and he knew at that time, that everybody's not going to make it to that level. So you got to really hone in on getting the education you need so you can make any type of adjustments that you need after football.
We're talking to NFL star and Penn State star Blair Thomas about life playing at Penn State. Now this opportunity comes. You're going to the draft in the 1990 draft. Were you surprised to be the second overall pick? Was that an amazing opportunity?
Well, I got invited to a couple All-Star games. I went to Japan, and then I also played in the Senior Bowl. And in Japan, I went over there with Anthony Thompson, who was a highly recruited running back out of Indiana. And, we went over to Japan. He was the featured guy, and, they put me in as fullback, even though I probably was 30, 40 pounds lighter than he was. But I understood that, you have to play big at this game if you want to have success. So I went out there and did an outstanding job playing a little fullback. And then that kind of catapulted me right into the Senior Bowl. And playing the Senior Bowl, I was MVP of the Senior Bowl. And at that point is when I kind of figured I was going to be one of the top couple picks. At that time, Atlanta had the number one pick. And they flew me into Atlanta, so I got a chance to meet with those guys down there. And then, the Jets was, I think, the number two pick. And then I forgot who was after that. But they showed a lot of interest in me. And then the night before the draft, Dick Steinberg, called me and told me that they was going to take me with the number two pick overall, unless something crazy happened. And Atlanta wound up trading that first pick to the Colts, and they wound up taking Jeff George at quarterback, and the Jets wound up taking me number two overall.
And when that happens and you get to New York and play for the Jets and play in New York's a lot different than playing in Happy Valley, isn't it? For sure.
Yes, it is. It's definitely an adjustment because now guys are playing for their livelihood. You got, guys that's not going to help you. And you think once you get to, the 53-man roster is a different story. But as you're, working out trying to make that club, no one's really helping you. And in some cases, I heard where guys will tell you the wrong thing to do just so, they can kind of protect their jobs. So yes, it's a depth experience. So, but as a player, you got to go out there and do what's best, for you as a player. And this game is a tough game. You got to play it with your heart and play it like it's supposed to be played.
Definitely. So you're definitely playing it like it needs to be played and having the opportunity and playing at the Jets. What will you say were your most fondest memories of playing with the Jets?
From the Jets, it's a sweet, bitter ending because it was one of my better games Monday night against Chicago, and I had a late fumble in the game. We could have won that game. An interception was, dropped, and my turnover prevented us from winning that game.
And then that was so that was a memory that you don't really want to remember, anyways. And
right,
so,
So it was great going for over 150, but then the late fumble that just wasn't something. But it's a part of the game.
Going into your rookie year, especially, what would you say your best year with the Jets? And then you went on to other teams after that. But what was your best year with the Jets? Your first year, would you say, in specific ways, and why your NFL career was shortened? Was it injuries, or what would you say it was?
Yes, my career was shortened mainly because of injuries. When I was up in New York, coming from Penn State, playing on the turf, on the grass all the time. But then when I got to the Jets, we're playing up in Meadowlands, and they It's a turf field, sort of like the Eagles. Everybody complained about Veterans Stadium and how bad that surface and turf was. But people failed to realize that, you know, up in the Meadowlands, it wasn't far from that. And I used to have to take 3 Advil just to get through warm-ups. Because my knees, my lower back, all those things were bothering me as I'm trying to get warmed up to play a game. And up in New York, I never was, in my opinion, healthy where I can, you know, do the things I was capable of doing.
And then where did you go after the Jets, after your couple of years in the Jets?
After the Jets, I went up to New England. In 94, I was in New England. And in the first preseason game, almost the first play, I suffered a high ankle sprain and was out, you know, 2 months. I came back, played a couple games, and then wound up getting released and getting picked up by Dallas. So I played the remainder of that season with Dallas, still coming off the high ankle sprain. I played against Green Bay in a playoff game. Scored 2 touchdowns against them, and then the next week we lost to the 49ers in the NFC Championship game.
So you had a great game before that, for sure. That's probably one of your playoff memory for you in the NFL is playing with the Cowboys, which people wouldn't have remembered, right?
Right, correct. Yep, that was outstanding. But, you know, when I was in Dallas, that was a bunch of great group of guys. And, you know, when I was in Dallas, I got there midway through the year, and I got Christmas presents from those guys. I was in New York 4 years and never got a Christmas present for any of the players. So that just tells you the type of team we had in that locker room. They were a tight, niche group of guys, even though some guys were getting in some trouble off the field.
And kind of picture that Cowboy team. Who was on that team of some of the players you played with? That Cowboy.
Emmitt, Michael Irvin, Nate Newton, Troy Aikman. Their whole main guys, all of them
so,
were there.
So you were used to that tradition. That was a perfect place for you to go. You played with the Penn State. You go from there to, you know, playing with some not very great teams, and then you get to the Cowboys, and you're like, wow, we're back to tradition again. Even though it was a short stint, I'm sure it was an enjoyable stint because that's what you like playing for, a tradition team, a team that's based on winning, a winning tradition, especially when
you're
playing.
And you can see that was the focus of those guys. Nothing else. To get all the bull crap, we're going to go out here and we're playing this game to win. And that's what I liked about, you know, being in Dallas.
And it just seems like, Blair, every time, you know, you're talking about the story of your best game with the Jets, 150 yards, and then you fumble, lose the game. Then you end up, you know, playing, gets injured, keep with injuries, then get to the Cowboys and get to be in the playoffs and score 2 touchdowns. And then are you thinking, hey, you know, every time I start to develop the ability to get back to the kind of playing I was at Penn State, what happens? Injuries, right? That's just all it is. You just literally...
Yeah.
So what happens after the year with the Cowboys?
Okay. You know, Emmitt was a little banged up towards the end of the year, so he's healthy the next year. They don't re-sign me. I work out with Atlanta before finishing up my final year with the Carolina Panthers.
And Blair, I guess after all this is done, it's kind of a humbling experience as well, not having the career you thought you'd have in the NFL, right? And I'm sure you tell young kids this all the time. And you're talking to them and working in camps and coaching that, you know, it's something different when you're such a, you know, somebody who's performing at such a high level in college and then go to the pros. And the only thing that's keeping you from, it's not your talent, it's injuries. And how do you speak to young people about that and stuff?
Well, see, we create our future. We create everything that we do. And, you know, unfortunately, your body playing a physical game like that cannot absorb everything that goes on in NFL. And as a running back, everybody knows that your career is a short-lived career at running back in most cases. So, you know, I accept that. And I let younger guys know that, you know, you're in control of your destiny and you got to work hard to get there each and every day. But, you know, enjoy the experience that you're going through because tomorrow's not promised to you. And so you've got to enjoy the opportunity that you have and be thankful for what you did accomplish.
Definitely. And so when you finally have to retire, do you have a good idea of what you want to do in your career right after retirement? Life after football, I've interviewed tons of guys. Some of them know exactly what they want to do. Others are just are confused about what they want to do. Did you have a good thought? Or where you wanted to go, Blair?
Yes, I did. Kind of know, because I always gave back to the younger players, so I knew I wanted to do some type of coaching and giving back to the sport that was good to me. So I wound up coaching at Temple University for 8 years. So that was a great experience, because now I got an opportunity to teach younger players all the things that I learned, good and bad, and teach the kids that you can't let a coach or any other player get you out of your game. You got to make sure that you work hard to be the best you can be and have the confidence that you need to go out there and be successful.
And from the experience of coaching with Temple, what did you learn from that experience?
Just the joy of giving back to the younger players, because just like I was a young player trying to obtain my goal and dreams, I wanted to try to streamline as many players travels to get to the NFL as possible. And I wound up coaching Stacy Mack, who came out of Temple University, and Jason McKee, who played for the Chicago Bears for probably 6 or 7 years. My best guy that I coached, Bernardo Sharp, he wound up pulling a hamstring on pro day, which, you know, as a running back, pulling your hamstring on pro day and trying to get you in the camp with an injury is not going to happen. They'll pass on you and get another free agent.
Oh, wow. Okay. So after that stint with Temple, did you ever think you were going to coach anymore, or were you looking entrepreneur-wise at that point?
Well, yeah, at that point, I started my entrepreneurial journeys and, came across a product that's outstanding. It's a magnesium sulfate-based product for aches and pains, and it's called Immortal Magnesium Therapy. You use it in several different ways as a topical application, and you can also soak in a tub with the crystals.
And from all your injuries and pain, as you talked about playing with the Jets and stuff like that, how did you come up with the idea of endorsing this product and being an entrepreneur in this?
Yes, that's exactly why I endorsed it, because they told me I had a shoulder injury that needed to be surgically replaced. But the only problem was if I was to get the surgery and I would be twice my age, I would need two more surgeries in between. So I started soaking in this product all the time, and my range of motion came back. I talked to a Dr. Carolyn Dean out of, she's in Hawaii now, but she wrote the book, The Magnesium Miracle. And using this product, it reduced the amount of bone spurs that I had in my shoulder and kind of dissolved them. And my range of motion is so much better now that I wish I had this product when I was in the NFL.
Definitely. I wish, being a former professional wrestler, Blair, and the pain I'm in right now, my back and sciatica, I understand I'm 41, but I have a back of probably a 60-year-old man being in pro wrestling for 9 years, that I know exactly the pain and how pain just really keeps you from wanting to perform, to do things, especially as an entrepreneur and wanting to go and coach and different things, and you're feeling all these aches and pains. You don't want to lay down. You don't want to move at times. You don't want to be active. And it must be great to alleviate that pain, right?
Right. Well, this product, I guess it was a godsend. It was a blessing for me because I use it every day now. When I get out of the shower, I spray my neck and my shoulders, my lower back, my knees. I don't get my feet all the time, but that's the process, is to try to get all the areas that I know is going to give me some problems from time to time and be proactive instead of waiting for it to bother me. I'm aggressive and getting on it ahead of time, and I feel outstanding.
We're talking to Blair Thomas, former Penn State star and also NFL star and member of the Pennsylvania State Hall of Fame, for Sports Hall of Fame. Now, Blair, you're an entrepreneur. Are you doing anything else, any other projects you're promoting right now, Blair?
Yes, we are. This fall, we're going to launch Nittany Sports Huddle. Myself and Quintus McDonald played with me at Penn State, and Quintus also played with the Colts and then had a stint with the 49ers. We're doing a show that's, you know, Penn State driven, but everything that's happening, all the excitement and other feeds that we're going to be on also has given me an opportunity to possibly want to do it year-round as well. But the Nittany Sports Huddle is we're just trying to make sure everybody, former players, get an opportunity to find out what guys are involved in now and get our take on it, because everybody always want to know what former players think of the program now up at Penn State, and we just want to make sure that we give a positive spin so those players that's up there can have the same experience that we had when we were in college winning national championships.
And so where are you going to do Nittany Sports Huddle? Is that going to be television or is that radio?
It's a combination of both. We're going to have a television feed as well, but we're going to probably broadcast Tuesday nights on Sports Journey. And then we have the Village Connector is another feed that's going to carry our show. And we're looking at doing a couple more networks as well.
Well, that's great, especially for the Penn State fans that could tune in all over the world that want to know what's going on and bring that positive spin to Penn State football and Penn State sports in general, and then get to bring back those other players that will, give that that idea and how many memories that so many people want to know what's going on with those people. And I know when I put them on Facebook post up, I interviewed you and put the link to the different radio where our interview airs, there are going to be so many people saying, I remember Blair Thomas. So what do you want to say to the fans of Penn State right now listening to the program? What would you like to say?
The main thing that my message I try to give when I go out and speak to former Penn Staters is the fact that I want to thank them for their years of support, because a lot of people think that it's just the players on the field that creates that environment, that energy, that for us to go out there and win games. But it's been so many games where I know the fans, you know, being involved in a game help us pull some of those games out. People travel all over the country to support Penn State. I would like to thank those fans for that, because there's a sacrifice to do that financially, and, you know, and time that, you know, people give to follow Penn State athletics. So I'd like to thank those guys for their years of support. And, you know, it very seldom come from a former player, so I like to go out there and do that as much as I can.
Well, that's great. I hope you get involved in Penn State football more and more in different ways, and maybe be involved with Coach Franklin and what he's trying to do at Penn State. And it's great you're getting involved to continue to show that how important your alma mater is and all these different things. And what would you say is your fondest memory of playing against Pitt? What was your record against Pitt, by the way? That's a great way to end this.
I don't recall completely, but we might have been undefeated.
I think 89. What happened in 89? I have to go back on that one and then post that on Facebook. I think that was a game Pitt might have won. I don't know.
No, it probably been 88. It probably was the 88 season. That's the year I sat out.
That's great. And you also have a football camp as well, Blair, too? Is that another place?
Yes, we're working on doing football camps all over the country. Myself and Quintus, he have a company, I Am Recycling. I try to help him out with a lot of his camps. And then I have Blair Thomas Football Academy, in which I'm going to start, you know, not just personally going out coaching camps myself, but I'm going to probably start hosting some as well.
All right, well, fantastic. So where can we find information on you, Blair? What's the best place to find more info and learn more about you?
As far as the EMT product, you can go to getemt.com. For Nittany Sports Huddle, you can find us on Facebook. It's Nittany Sports Huddle. It's going to be our feed. And, I have on Facebook myself, Blair Thomas Football Academy.
All right, well, I'm going to definitely connect with you again, especially if we see Penn State and you want to give some updates of what you think's going on and some breakdown of what's going on this year in Penn State football. I'll reach out to you again, and if you have anything else to promote, feel free to reach out to me. We're friends on Facebook and connected on LinkedIn, so definitely don't be a stranger, okay, Blair?
Okay, Neil, thanks for having me on your show.
All right, take care, Blair. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And unbelievably enough, I really look at, I'm a huge college basketball fan. And when you talk about somebody who was top-notch in college, it is just something that people never forget, especially if you have records. And this man has done so many things in the college career. He had an NBA career. He had even a career overseas after that, and even coached. So a great story. So I want to welcome the program, NBA champion, Ohio State's all times career points record person, also second team All-American, Dennis Hobson. Dennis, how are you, man? And thanks for being on the show.
I am fine. I'm glad to be on the show. I'm very excited about it.
Absolutely, Dennis. And I think that when you talk about your career at Ohio State, it brings back tons of memories, and it must have been one of your most fun times playing basketball, wasn't it?
It was. It was, a young guy growing up in Toledo, Ohio. And actually, a lot of people don't know this, but I kind of committed to the University of Cincinnati. And the head coach there had gotten fired that summer, so I was able to change my commit, and I decided to go to Ohio State. And it was just one of those things to where I was a very immature young guy out of high school, didn't really know how to play the game. And I got to a point after my first couple years to where I finally started taking a real liking to the game and understanding how to play the game from the neck up. And I think my last 2 years were very productive, and I was excited. And like I said, I never dreamed that I would have accomplished the things that I did at The Ohio State University.
Oh, absolutely. Let's think about it. First of all, Dennis, in a way that when you guys, you kind of brought back the Ohio State Buckeye basketball, didn't you? Everyone thought about football, but when you arrived there, the program definitely was at a good, they were doing really well, for sure, at that time, right? Dennis, it was before, they were okay, but you were bringing the program back.
You know what, it's, again, I think growing up in Toledo, Ohio, you were a Michigan fan because Michigan is only about 30 minutes from Toledo. And as I got older, I understood the rival between Ohio State and Michigan. And I think coming up, watching Calvin Ramsey, which was from my hometown in Toledo as well, watching him play at Ohio State and kind of taking a liking to the Buckeyes, it was just, you never knew, or I never knew how prominent Ohio State was. And like you said, it's always going to be second class to football, Ohio State football. But the program has grown a tremendous amount over the years, and I was just glad to be a part of it.
And at that time, remind me who the coach was, Dennis, you played under. Who did you play
under? I played under Eldon Miller for my first 3 years, and then Gary Williams my senior year.
And that was the year with Gary Williams really brought the Ohio State Buckeye basketball back, right? Would you say?
It was one of those things to where Eldon Miller, he was a great coach. He was just a little more conservative than what Gary Williams was. Gary Williams was a more up-tempo guy. And even before I got to Ohio State under Coach Miller, he had the great players. Like Herb Williams, Clark Kellogg, again, Calvin Ramsey, and those type of guys. So the program has always been one of the elite programs, but I think Gary Williams just kind of brought a lot of energy into the program once he got the job for the couple of years that he was there.
Where they were looking at, hey, we're going to compete now. We're going to compete. We're going to forget who's Michigan. We're going to go after it, right, Dennis? And remind me specifically that year, was your senior year your best year in your career, would you say?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I went from averaging, I want to say, 5 points as my freshman year, even getting a chance to start, going into a starting role, averaging 9 points my sophomore year, and then leading the team in scoring my junior year under Coach Miller, averaging 20 points something a game. And you go from 20 points to 29 points a game and second in the nation in scoring. Again, as a young boy, growing up, I just never would have dreamed that I would have went on to play at Ohio State and have the success that I had.
And that year, I think with Gary Williams coming from Boston College, he brought, you know, Boston College basketball back the same way. And the expectations were high. And then you bring the up-tempo game, you're averaging 29 points a game, and Ohio State's doing pretty well for themselves. It's kind of like I can picture this, Dennis, and that's really crazy when I was such a March Madness fan. But Ohio State at that time, you guys had thoughts of going really far in the tournament, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We were playing with a team that we had great players, but we didn't have some of the talent that a lot of the teams had. And I know the first round of my senior year, we played in Atlanta, and we crushed Kentucky that year, the first round. And actually, we were beating Georgetown by 16 that second game. And they had too much manpower, too much firepower for us, and they ended up beating us my senior year that second round. But with what we had, we were very competitive, and we played hard night in and night out. And again, I enjoyed the teammates that I played with, and they helped me to accomplish a lot of the things that I did accomplish as a player at Ohio State.
And was that the first year were you guys in the tournament the other 3 years or not?
We won the NIT championship my junior year. That's when Brad Sellers was a senior. We actually won the whole thing. And then the years prior to that, I was a freshman. I remember my freshman year, Tony Campbell was a senior. We played in the NCAA, and I think we lost to Louisiana Tech.
But I think what you were able to do with the 29 points a game, you really said you brought Ohio State Buckeye basketball back, in my opinion, which helped recruiting classes for years to come, in my opinion.
It did. I look at that, and when you say when you hear 29 points a game, and actually I talked about that. I went into the Ohio Basketball Hall of Fame in May, and I touched on that a little bit. That's a lot of points to average a game, and for me to go out and to be able to compete again night in and night out. And again, I give a lot of the credit to my teammates because they respected what I could do and they allowed me to do that. It was just an accomplishment that nowadays you just don't see a lot of guys that can just go out and score 29 points a game night in and night out and then end up averaging 29 at the end of the year. So it helped. I'm sure it helped. But Ohio State, I'm not saying Dennis Hopson put Ohio State on the map again. Ohio State has always had some big-time players way before I did, and they continue to have big-time players. It's just one of the elite programs. And again, I'm proud to be a part of it, to have been a part of it.
You're being very humble, but Dennis, you and Gary were the ones that brought Ohio State Buckeye to start thinking about the basketball team, honestly. Clark Kellogg away, but I really believe in my own heart, especially when we're talking about the NCAA tournament and how basketball changed with the big conferences. You really gave Ohio State that. I'll have to go back in my history and look at things because I'm not a sportscaster. I'm just a celebrity interviewer. But I was such a huge fan of that time and the Buckeyes bringing it back. And I forgot all about losing to Georgetown. But I think the year after that, you guys even kept going. And then later on, really. But Gary Williams and you, in my opinion, brought Ohio State to start not just thinking about the football team. Now, basically, you're a big-time player. And the NBA draft comes, and this is another claim to fame that you can really definitely bring out that people might not remember. But coming out of college, you were highly ranked to go to the NBA, right? People were really looking at you as one of the top players.
It was between me and Reggie Williams as the number one and number two shooting guards coming out of coming out that senior year. And I was drafted the third pick to New Jersey in the first round. And had he have been, Reggie Williams had been the third pick, then I would have been the fourth pick to the LA Clippers. And again, I think that draft had Scottie Pippen, Kenny Smith, Reggie Miller. It was a great draft, had some great players, Armand Gilliam. So it was an honor for me to be appreciated and to be selected the third player in that 1987 draft.
Wow, bringing it back, 87. I was 14 years old in 1987, just to give you my age. But I remember, and I remember your, I think I had your rookie card because I was collecting cards at that time. I was just a huge basketball fan at that point. So basically, Dennis, you get in as the third pick. You play for the Nets. And was the Nets, because you were drafted, the Nets didn't have a great team, did they?
No, it was tough. It was tough. And the team wasn't... The team was subpar before I got there, and once I got there, it was one of those teams, one of those things that they were looking for a savior in. And now, as I'm older, I can really appreciate what they were looking for. I think back then I was a young guy, and again I was a very immature guy, not really understanding a lot. But being older, you understand what that franchise label meant. And if I had to do some things over again, I would have done a lot of things over again, being that third pick in the draft back in 87. But, it was a learning lesson. I had a great time during my time in New Jersey. My third year, actually got better each year. I think I averaged 9 points my rookie year, and I went to 12 points. And then I went into my third year leading the team in scoring before I was traded to Chicago that following year, going into my fourth year. So, it was a good place. The East Coast was a little tough for me. Being young, coming from the Midwest, it was a little fast for me. That was something that I never got used to. But if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't have done anything different.
So you think about it in so many ways that you would have stayed on a not very good team. You could have had a longer NBA career, and that's really the truth. And so you got to tell us the story of being traded to the Chicago Bulls, and basically what happened, and which led you to a shorter NBA career. And I don't know the story. That's why I love having these stories, and I appreciate you answering those questions for me. But I mean, it's got to be awesome to be near New York City, leading the team in scoring, even though you guys aren't that good. Did Derek Coleman, I'm trying to remind myself, who was on your team your third year when you started to really start to develop?
We had Pearl Washington, Buck Williams, Chris Morris, Roy Hinton. We had some star-studded guys on the team. It was just one of those things to where, the biggest problem that I've seen was the consistency with the coaching staff. And 3 years that I played there in New Jersey, we went through four different coaches. And it's not always easy to adjust, plan for different guys, because everybody has their own philosophy. Everybody does things different. And it takes time to pick up on what is expected from you as a player, for one, and a coach's philosophy. So it would have taken time for us to build the type of team that we probably could have had if we had more consistency with the coach.
Now, who were the coaches for when you were with the Nets? Who did you play on?
We had Dave Wall. We had Bob McKenna. We had Willis Reed. And we had Bill Fitch. In the 4 years that I was there.
Oh, wow.
In the 3 years that I was there. I'm sorry, we had four guys in the 3 years that I was there.
And the problem was, New Jersey was the redhead stepchild of New York, really, because of the Knicks. And even though the Knicks were up and down as well, you can't, if you're not winning in a big city, forget about it. You're going to be gone as a coach. And so were you surprised about being traded? Did you think you were going to play your career with the Nets, or you just...
I didn't know that I was going to play my whole career with the Nets, but I was surprised about the trade. Me and Bill Fitch didn't always see eye to eye. And again, that probably was the immaturity of me with what he may have been trying to tell me. But to be traded is okay, but I thought to be traded to Chicago was going to be difficult. They really like to trade. A lot of outsiders like to trade. But me knowing the Chicago Bulls and some of the other guys like the Sadell Threaks, the Sam Vincents that played behind Michael Jordan, I knew that it would be tough. And I thought that I was just getting to a point as a player in New Jersey that I was getting my confidence back. And I was starting to build upon that.
and I had my rhythm going as a player. But I knew going to Chicago that rhythm was going to be broken because I was playing behind the best player to have played the game. So I wasn't going to be getting the type of rhythm that I needed as a player to perform the way that I wanted to perform.
And that's so interesting when you talk about that, Dennis, in a lot of ways. You go to a winner, but yet you know you're not going to play. So you go from, I don't know how many wins you have with New Jersey, to the Bulls. And you're right at the prime of this team becoming, you know, a juggernaut in so many aspects. Was it hard because you were a star at Ohio State and you were a star with the Nets, meaning you were a leading scorer, to go to a place where you became a role player or a bench player with the Bulls? How difficult was that? Was that humbling for you, especially when you said you were still trying to mature as a human being at that point in time?
Yeah, it was a humbling experience. But again, you look at it as being young. And I think the biggest thing with me is that I've been playing the game for a long time, and I've always been one of the main players on every team that I've played on. So to go to a team, again, that was very competitive and to play behind the best player to ever play the game of basketball, it was a very tough thing. And it was tough because now I'm experiencing something that I've never experienced as a player before, playing behind the greatest player in the world, and for two, not getting the consistent minutes that I would need to be productive on the floor. So, yes, it was something that was very, very tough for me because, again, I've never been through it. And then the other thing is, it was something that I've never experienced before. So now I'm trying to work my way or trying to deal with experiencing something that I've never had to deal with before. And that made it even tougher.
So, Dennis, did you have to guard Michael in practice every day?
Every day.
Oh, my gosh. That might live up as the more claim to fame when you're in your 70s telling people, I guarded Michael Jordan every day and telling, you know, who's Dennis Hobson? But, oh, Michael Jordan. So, I mean, that's got to be unbelievable in so many ways. And you had to really work Michael, right? Because Michael, with the Jordan rules and all the different things that were going on where they double team, you're guarding him in practice every day.
And he, you know, the funny thing about it is the way that you see him playing games is the way that he practiced. And you had to come ready and prepare for practice daily because, again, the chitter chatter started in the training room when you were getting your ankles taped, you know, the red team versus the white team. And it was a very, very competitive team, and you kind of go from a team like New Jersey, and I'm not saying that we weren't competitive, but you go from New Jersey to Chicago where the guys, everything was competition. You had to lace them up and put your hard hat on, you know, no matter what the situation was, and be ready to deal with a war daily.
So were you tired after guarding him all the time that, you know, when you did get your opportunity, so playing right behind him, that's difficult because, again, they're not going to take him out of the game much. And so did you look to try to improve your craft to try to take on another position or another role on the team because you knew what was going to happen?
I just did what I was supposed to do. You know what I mean? I competed in practice. When I got in the game, I tried to play as hard as I could play. But I think, again, the biggest thing was I started lacking confidence, and that was something that I've never had, that I've never experienced before. So it was tough. The first time you experience something, it's tough to deal with, and it wasn't always easy for me to deal with. So, I just did what I had to do. I got that opportunity in Chicago. I knew it was going to be tough playing behind Mike. But the good thing was I got a championship out of it. And then the following year I got traded to Sacramento to where I got my groove back and, you know, got back to averaging double digits in points when I got traded to Sacramento.
Well, that's great. So you win an NBA championship, you go back, now you play for the Kings and double digits. So the question is, because we could talk about the days in the NBA, but we want to definitely go to life after basketball because there's still a story to be told tonight. Dennis, once you go ahead and you get traded to Sacramento and you have another good season, what shortened your NBA career? Was it injuries?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't injuries. It was me not taking a personal interest in my own life. I allowed, and I'm not going to get into names, but you know, I allowed my agent, once Sacramento had guaranteed money on the table for me after that year because I did perform well. With the 18 minutes per game that I was getting. I was averaging, you know, like 10 and a half points in 18 minutes of play. And they were trying to reward me with a one-year contract. And my agent thought that we should have pressed them for a multi-year contract. And, you know, again, when I have to share things with young kids today, that's the first thing I tell them, to make sure they take an interest in their own life. Don't put their life in somebody else's hands. But that's another story. But yeah, so me being young, I'm kind of following his lead because that's what he was hired to do. But again, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip if it's not there. So if Sacramento said that they didn't have the multi-year contract, and I'll never forget this, you take the one-year deal, and like they explained to me, you'll be an unrestricted free agent after that year. If you have another good year, either you could stay here or you can move on to another team. But you know, waiting around. Eventually, they got tired of me waiting, and they went and they signed Vincent Askew. And then I went overseas, and once you go overseas, you kind of get stuck. You kind of get caught playing overseas because the season starts earlier. So and that was just more of a thing. It wasn't an injury. That was just more of a thing to where I should have took more interest in my own life and made the decisions, and I could have, you know, I could have had a longer career in the NBA.
So when you go overseas, the money's definitely not what the NBA is, right? No. But so you're at this point where you're stuck, you want to make a living, but you can't jump back to the NBA because of the seasons? Is that you don't see a lot of guys?
No. What it is where they trap you, you know, being one of the main players, and I was one of the main players, and I did make good money, but being one of the main players, it's one of those things to where when you get that call in July about coming back in August, they're enticing you with a guaranteed contract, okay? So the thing is, do you turn down the guaranteed contract to stay here, or do you take the guaranteed contract? Now, the thing is, what I did was I just took the guaranteed money. So, again, it starts in August. Our training camp here for the NBA doesn't start until October, I do believe, November sometime. So I always went with the guaranteed contracts.
Right.
So you kind of get trapped. That's what when they say trapped overseas, that's what they mean.
Oh wow. Okay. So guys like Carl Krauser or different people from the University of Pittsburgh that seem like maybe they had a possibility of playing a little bit in the NBA, they're constantly traveling and going overseas that they get decent money. They're like, this is guaranteed. I can't take the chance of going and trying out for a team and then lose my guaranteed money. I see.
Exactly.
And there's guys that are playing overseas for years, like Donatas Savakis. I'm just a huge Pitt fan. All these different guys that were pretty good in college, but, you know, who knows that they could have been a role player in the NBA, but they rather take that chance and do that. So basically, Dennis, by you going overseas, especially averaging the certain points in the NBA, you were a star overseas. So tell us the highlights of that, and then we'll go life after basketball after that.
You know what? I started over in Spain, and I played there for 2 years, which was a great experience because I played against people like Arvydas Sabonis and big time name guys over there. And again, one of the teams that I played on, they played outside of the country in other countries because they have like a separate league, which they call the Cup, the European Cup. So I was blessed to play in great country in big time cities that kind of, it was just like being back home. It was just like being in the States. So I was spoiled. It wasn't like some of the guys go over and they play in these third world countries.
Right.
You know, so I'm making money. I'm playing in great places. I'm eating great food and I'm experiencing something different that I've never experienced before. So my experiences over there in Spain were great. I left there after the second year. I went over to France and played a few years. And then I ended up playing over in Israel, which was probably one of the better places that I played, which a lot of people think is a war zone. But it's not. It's actually a great place. I met great people. Again, it's like being here in the States. Food was great. The living was great. And it was a great experience for me going overseas playing the 7 years that I did.
It definitely seems like it. So then when did you decide you had to retire? Was it a decision you made for yourself, or did the body say it's time?
It was a decision I made for myself. I mean, my body is still the way it was when I played in the pros and at Ohio State. I might have lost a little muscle, but I still don't have any weight on me. It just had got time to where it just wore on me mentally. And, being overseas, you're going to be over there 8, 9, maybe 10 months out the year.
Oh, wow.
And then you come home and you only get a month and a half, 2 months to be at home. It just got to be a little bit much. So I just say, hey, you know what? Combining the 7 years over there with the time that I played in the NBA, that was close to 13, 14 years of a professional career. It was just time for me to leave it alone. And, again, I don't regret any of the moves that I made while I was a professional player.
Definitely, because you were a star in both places in so many ways. And the experience of Michael Jordan, you probably could write a book on just playing, guarding Mike. People are paying a lot of money to try to go one-on-one with Mike. So you have the story, and where these fantasy camps where people get the chance to try to score against Mike. So you have a lot of times you've scored against him. You could talk about that for sure. All right. So life after basketball, did you want to be a coach? Was that something that you had in your thought process, or did you try other things right after you finished your career?
I tried other things. I did business, had some good things going on. I had a trucking company going on. I love cars, so I got into playing around with cars a little bit. And after that, I was an NBA scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. And, you know, one day it just hit me. I said, you know what? The game was good to me. I want to give back to the game. So I said, you know, I want to coach. And that was something that I never would have dreamed that I would have been doing. Being a college coach. So what I had to do first was I had to go back to school to finish my degree. But I didn't have my degree.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I went back to Ohio State at the age of 40, and I had to do a year and two quarters in order to get my degree. And that's what I did. And once I got my degree, I started connecting with different people, and I connected with Coach Massimino, Rolly Massimino. And, he's like my second father, and I appreciate everything he's done for me. And
I'm a huge fan of Rolly. Oh, my.
He's a great guy. Yeah, he's a great guy, and he gave me my first shot. And he hired me down at Northwood University, and I was there for 2 years before I got hired by Bowling Green State University.
And then now you're you coached assistant at Bowling Green and learning the coaching and taking all your experience in basketball, and you found out you love teaching and coaching for sure.
Yeah, it's something because I had good hands put on me, and I can thank everybody that's come in contact with me when I was a player. And in turn, I wanted to return the favor to some of the other guys. And I'm not saying that you can make pros, but that's all going to be on the individual. But I think my passion for the game and going out and trying to do my best to educate and teach guys to become the best players they can be. It's just something that I love and I enjoy, and hopefully it'll carry me for another couple of years. I'm not employed right now, but I'm definitely going to be looking to get back in the game one way or another.
And who knows, someone might call for you to scout again or whatever. You never know this business and how it works for sure. Now, Dennis, are you doing anything in the community, involved in any charities or anything right now?
I'm not doing anything in the community. I'm very active, but I don't have anything personal going on with myself. But if somebody does have things going on, I always try to be a part of it. I get asked to do a lot of different things. And it's just hard for me to turn down, especially with me being in my hometown of Toledo. It's just hard for me to turn down anything that's going on here or in Columbus. I always call Columbus my second hometown. But personally, I don't have anything going on.
Well, when you coach, you're just busy year-round. And so just help out with charities, being part of celebrity golf tournaments. I'm sure you've done all those different things. So, Dennis, where can we find information on you? Is there a place to find you, a website or different things to find out?